So we've been having a rather lively discussion, I think, about this poem, for those of you who haven't been here the past few days. And we've been talking about, somewhat about what we're doing here, you know. And the roles that are involved. And I was reflecting today about how really none of us know what we're doing. And how good that feels to be able to come to a place. And yesterday I was talking about, you know, the structure of sesshin, the roles, and so on. And I thought today, if we were to be transported to Japan, or somebody from Japan were to come here, that would probably not look quite the same, you know. But again, that's the beauty of what Koban left us with, is that there's this essential piece of information that allows for flexibility and growth and adaptation. And last night I had this image of one of those giant bubbles. Have you ever seen 10 feet long? And we're all like shepherding it along. And how utterly beautiful it is when it pops, because then there's nothing left. Just now. Hongzhi says that to me it's this line of very naturally mind and dharmas emerge and harmonize. It comes from this deep, penetrating silence or stillness that can be achieved. But out of that, we have to move. And it very naturally, we fulfill whatever duties we have to do, but there's no actual movement. It's still taking place in this context of stillness. We were talking also about the nurturing of a place like this, and ultimately, the thing itself doesn't need nurturing, but we need to keep that portal open for other people. We have, all of us are already on the path. And it seems fairly natural, actually, I think, for a lot of people who come here to just accept what we're doing. But to other people, it seems very new and it's not clear. And so we are the guardians of this way. All of us, and when, even when, and as well as when you go out into the greater world or the greater environment, you are somebody who is representing this way of being. We all have responsibility for maintaining this way. And as we were talking, there's unmanifest and manifested ways, aspects of that, visible and invisible realms. So to take those last words of the poem that penetrate and study, this is our task, I guess you could say. And so even though we don't know what we're doing, something's transpiring and continues to transpire. I think we inherently know and we inherently understand what to do, what we're doing. And those of us who have set out on this path, we gather together and we debate and affirm our way together. And we also have to be aware not to be trapped by our own clarity. We have to continue to deepen our understanding. I like Koban's translation of the Prajnaparamita mantra, Gate Gate. Is falling apart, always falling apart, you know, completely falling apart, something like that. So it's, on the one hand, we're nurturing something that's been passed to us and we honor it and maintain it, but it also needs to be kept fresh, and it evolves into whatever you all bring to it. But we come back and we meet together and we discuss so that we're not drifting off into some confusion about what we're doing.
It doesn't interrupt the flow. I remember something Copan said that I thought you might, along this line. It's in the Thursday morning discussions that Judy brought on the web. It says something like about awakening. When you awaken, it's like waking from a dream. You realize you were the last person to awake. And you think, oh my God, where was I? What was I doing? And then he said, but then if you grasp, or if you realize it and you understand this is it, and you live in it, you it becomes again the deepest dream.
Hmm. Well, it is a kind of dream. I mean, I come here last time, actually. Last time when I went home, it took me a week of wandering around in my big backyard to get back to Earth. It was kind of like a dream that I couldn't wake up from, you know. But you know, waking up from the dream of Sesshin, you wake up and you're in some other... How did I get here? I'm driving down the freeway. Because the only thing that is not a dream is so hard for us to be in. We keep popping ourselves out of what I would think of as truth. This is truth, but the truth that you can't label, that you can't call it something, is what you wake up when you emerge in that moment. This kind of deep stillness that occurs, I really someday would like to have a very challenging session for all of you where we have low battery chirp on a smoke alarm in the room. And see how your practice is. At Hokoji, apparently there was some argument about whether a certain window should be open or closed. I wasn't there. And because with the window open, you could hear the creak like this. And someone felt that it should be closed so that because it was disturbing, that sound. And the other day I was working in a house that had one of those chirps, but it was on the other side of a sheet that we couldn't go around, and I thought, this would be great. I almost left one in the Hokoji.
So, yeah. Probably should have said something the first day, but I didn't. Wanted to thank you for visiting us again.
Great to be here.
Sort of marks the beginning of spring and coming back to life, sort of. I used to live in New Mexico and like it a great deal. Sometimes I get, when I'm here, I get homesick for New Mexico. I was out walking around a while ago on the land here, and I came across some barbed wire. And actually, it's not hard to find out here. This was well fenced in the past, sometime in the past, 75, maybe even 100 years ago, I don't know. Something, I can't really describe it very well, but something about the barbed wire on the one hand, and barbed wire encloses and keeps cattle and sometimes human beings prisoner, and then Jikoji, which is sort of like a place of realization or liberation or freedom. The contrast sort of struck me. So I cut a piece of the barbed wire and took it back to my room and didn't know what to do with it. Anyway, I cut it into some smaller pieces, and then I was moving around the smaller pieces carefully, of course, because it is still sharp. I made a circle like that out of the barbed wire, and with the barbs. Although I must say, this is very, very. There must be, I don't know, several hundred different kinds of barbed wire. And this is one of the mildest forms of barbed wire there is. But nevertheless, I thought, oh, that's the crown of thorns. And then it's the season right now as well. So I had a little wooden plaque, and I attached one of these to the plaque, and then here it says, I wrote, well, on the computer I wrote, section of an old barbed wire fence found rotting into the earth on the southern boundary of Chikoji Zen Center in the Santa Cruz Mountains. In Santa Cruz, I think means Sacred Cross, which is interesting. And then down below, I wrote, "Our crown of thorns is open," because there's this opening here. And then I sort of fixed it on here, and I'd like to give it to you.
Well, next time you come to New Mexico, we'll have to find you one of the Santaros that has barbed wire. I've seen that. The cedar carved guys. I've been talking with everybody, one by one. And it's great. I mean, there's so much passion, you know. That's what's interesting to me about what we're doing. And it gives me hope. Wherever you are, wherever you perceive yourself along the way, I think you're all a great group of people. I think I've talked more in the past 2 days than I have in the past 6 months. So I'm a little on the quiet side today, but if anybody has any particular thing they want to bring up, now's a good time.
About the poem?
Yeah.
Or anything. I was reading a book on the Heart Sutra, and in it I found something that was very close to the poem. It says, "The purest emptiness has no image, but is the source of all images." In the poem it says, "Utter emptiness has no image." And so I'm trying to me, the image that conjures up is that the purest emptiness is an experience. It's not something that you can actually you can only describe with words or with images or with thoughts, but you can never really relay it completely. And in that way, it's the source of all images, because you try to explain it, but you can't really relay an experience. That's something only for yourself.
Well, when you say the source of all images, the thing that pops in my mind is it's the source of all phenomenon. We are phenomenon. Everything from just like in the Heart Sutra, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, mind, consciousness, is all part of that phenomenon which arises from that original source. Well, in the literature, it can be said because it's written. I mean, it's okay to say it, I think, that however, whoever's phrase you want to grab, the bottom of the bucket falling out, the body and mind dropping off, that's the it's easy to sit and say, okay, you know, it's almost like sensory deprivation or something, staring at the wall. But to actually have what you construe as yourself disappear, that goes, what's revealed is the ultimate source, the absolute. That's what.
Yes, yes.
And the experience of that then says that what Buddha taught is true. And so your faith is confirmed. And you, as Hongzhi says, have to penetrate and study, expand and illuminate that experience. Mm-hmm. And yet, in some way, without that large, earth-shattering, so to speak, experience, that just being here is awakened mind. I mean, that's what I was saying at the beginning, that just to be here, all of us, this is awakened mind. Like to come in the door of the Zendo is, why would you? It's your awakened mind is.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Drags you in.
There's seeking of something. There's wanting to expand and to grow and to contribute. There's all of that,
I was watching one of our Sangha members. Somebody criticized the way he was dying, and I looked at him and I said the hardest thing imaginable would be to let go of your body completely, like willfully, and you're at the same time your consciousness, your mind consciousness, your cognizance, in other words. I mean, people do it, they decide to commit suicide. But for many of us, that would be the hardest thing to let go of, and that's what, if you get in your sitting to the point of the cessation of thought, mind consciousness stops. It starts again. But when it stops, you can see that realm. And the reason that it's not talked about so much is because there's no formula for it. Everybody has to discover it themselves. Nobody can tell you about it, but these words are meant to encourage and to, you know, it's like somebody exploring from far away and they send a letter back and say, wow, this is what where I've been. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but it is true, because you can confirm it. In fact, you have to confirm it, and you're encouraged to confirm it. Don't take their word for it. Don't take my word for it. You have to do it. And so we have a place like this because, you know, some of the guys on my crew are pretty interesting, you know, but probably wouldn't quite have the depth of conversation that we're having this week, because this is the context that you have to have it in. And when you have it in this context, you can have it elsewhere. But we have to have the opportunity to explore it without words, through our body and mind, and then discuss it and explore it. That's why we gather together. And there's something, by the way, in the, like a technique, I guess you could say, called the backward step. Have you read about it? Have you heard
of
it?
No.
Something to the effect of this striving that we have to accomplish the way, you know, whatever it is, whatever phrase you have, but this pushing hard, maybe Abhijah and Zach's example of wanting to do it right, the young, vigorous mind. But there's something called the backward step, which is as long as you're reaching, it's not out there. You have to come back. Turn the light inward is another one they say. The point is that you have to do it yourself. It's not outside yourself. It's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said that accepting to let go of our body is unmanageable, and yet at some point all of us are gonna go there, and at some point we're all gonna have to give up something that I don't know what else to say about that.
Well, but the idea is that you do it now.
Yeah.
While you're vigorous and can see it and experience before death. You die before. But you return. I mean, it's this is all not really sure, but one of the Buddha bodies is this form. We, Nirmanakaya, you know, we have lots of emanations of Buddha mind. That's why I was wandering around in my backyard. couldn't pop back into. Stay in that state.
Yeah.
But it doesn't serve so well to be in that state. That's why we Koban used the phrase willfully returning to ignorance. We enter back into all this crazy goings on knowingly, willfully, in order to help others, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's because we don't have any choice.
When I was a kid, my mom was dying from cancer. And I used to tickle her back when she was sick. Not to, you know, take us there, but she came out of her coma and she must have known I was standing behind her because she pointed to her back. So I started tickling her. I was a teenager, but even before then I've always was really fascinated with just, whoa. You know, I mean, I rode big wheels and I played with other kids, but I just still was, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe a weird look at everything, or view of everything. But I, like you, Zach, you know, I saw her wake up and look and see everyone and look up, and then I saw her tear, and I just watched her breath trail out. And when you have these relationships with these people, you know, like your mom, and something like that happens, it's just like you're never the same. But I've immediately felt it was like death isn't separation, it's integration. I didn't feel like, I mean, I'm a teenager, and this is kind of like what I'm hearing in my head. Death isn't separation, it's integration. It's beyond words. It's like, in this world, we have to reach out and grab a phone to call someone, which they were stuck to the wall then. We have to reach out and hug somebody to hug them and connect with them. and we have to make all these physical efforts to bond. And now I'm one with her. But it was kind of like a like her pouring into everything and igniting something in me, like moving me forward, showing me something, teaching me something, teaching me how to live. It was really hard, and even now when I talk about it, it's like, whew, and that was like how many 20 plus years ago, and it's really wild, but it and then that'll never go away, but I don't think it's supposed to, because it kind of carries you in a way, and it moves me in a way and carries me in a way that she's my teacher, and that experience was my teacher, and watching her go through it was my teacher, and I see nothing but beauty in it. I don't say, I mean, it's interesting. I see the gift in the experience. I don't know, I just, because you kind of went there, you start choking up, and then I started thinking about my mom, and so like, but again, too, it's a symbol for, too, it's non-dualistic. And we look at our studying and the things we say and the things we do and the precepts and everything, and you know, yeah, those are all there, and that's great, but there's, it's so connected and harmonious.
Well, that's the teaching of impermanence, and the sixth patriarch Huineng said that this body is temporal, and we take refuge in the Buddha body as our true body.
One day I was looking for some comfort in Pema Chodron. She always brings a lot of comfort to me, the way she writes. It's like the first thing I looked at, she goes, oh, aren't we lucky to wake up to other suffering?
Yeah.
And that brought you comfort?
I completely understand that. When I was recently incarcerated, and I would wake up every morning with all my fellow inmates, I mean, just seeing the mass amount of suffering in others, I mean, all the reasons that they were there, it was sublime. It was I don't know, I'm not sure I know how to explain it. It's you feel lucky, you feel honored to be witnessing it. And and you learn from it. You learn compassion for where these people came from and what they've been through. And it's a growing experience. Yeah.